Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. My name's Juwanza.
And this is Yvette.
And we are really, really, really excited to have an opportunity to talk to you, to bring you some real powerful, powerful information about the real estate process. This is our first show in a series of shows that we'll be doing on the real estate process. A lot of people out there are in the process of buying a home, or, you know, just in the process of even preparing to position themselves to be ready to buy a home when the time is right. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on right now, but even during this time, we can still prepare ourselves so that when the opportunity does present itself, you don't want to miss an opportunity because you just weren't ready.
That's right. And so that's why we put this show together, because if you follow along with us for this six-class broadcast, we're going to walk you through everything, the steps to home ownership, from personal finance all the way through to the closing. But this show is a little different because we're going to go right into asking those questions that you would want to know. So a lot of times you don't have an opportunity to ask those questions, and or you may not know someone that you can personally speak to, and that's why our special guest is here also, that's here available for you to just click one, and you can speak to our special guest live. But we're going to bring on our guest. Would you like to introduce him?
Mike Kao is an awesome, awesome speaker, an awesome presenter, and I guarantee you that if you don't know anything about how to prepare to position yourselves to, you know, get a loan, a mortgage loan, you'll definitely be so much more educated after this show today. And again, as Yvette mentioned, if you have a question at any point during the show and you're listening by telephone, all you have to do is just press 1, and then that will alert us that you have a question, and we can bring you on and you can ask your question of our guest. Yvette, please, I'm going to let you do the honors. Would you please introduce our special guest for today?
Yes, our special guest is Michael Kao. He is the Vice President Sales Manager of George Mason Mortgage. Mike has been in the business for a long time, and Mike, I just want to bring you on so you can tell us a little bit more about yourself, and so that listeners can get to know you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys. Thank you for the wonderful, warm introduction. So, yes, as you mentioned, I have been doing this for a long time. It's actually going on 27 years, the end of September of this year. So I know a little bit about financing. I've been through, you know, the ups and downs of the mortgage industry, and I'm still around. So I'm doing something right. So hopefully that listeners will find the show will be helpful in preparing for home ownership. You know, I work with clients that are 6 months out, a year out, up to 2 years. So it's never too late. But you got to set your goals, set your expectation, and just knock them out and achieve the home ownership that everybody deserves in the United States. So, yes, it's been, again, 27 years is a long time. I started right out of college, basically, moved back here from Northern Virginia to work for a mortgage company as an assistant to the manager. And I've learned all aspects of the mortgage industry, from the processing to the setting up the file, getting into underwriting, go to closing to make sure everything is going smoothly. So yeah, all aspects of it. So you know, I can certainly give you some good pointers of what how to start, things like that.
Well, if you could, Mike, a lot of times people, when it comes to real estate, buying a house, you know, there's so many different aspects to it. You know, a lot of times people think that they just walk into a bank and fill out an application and, you know, get a loan. You know, it's either an approval or a disapproval, and that's it. But a lot of times when it comes to the home buying process, oftentimes people have heard a lot of information from a lot of people, and every situation is different. You know, I'm sure you know from doing loans as long as you've done it that every situation is different. And so what, it's not like a one glove fits all type of thing. You might have a situation where somebody may have bought a house, oh, say 15 years ago, and now they might be getting advice from somebody who bought a house 15 years ago when mortgages were different. There was a whole lot of different things going on in the industry. Could you just talk for a moment about the importance, so that our listeners can understand the importance of hearing from the experts? When it comes to information such as buying a home, you want to make sure that your information is current, that it's accurate, it's up to date. Could you talk about the importance of people getting the information from the people that know, for, like, for example, in your case, the experts?
I appreciate that. Yes, it is very important to listen to professionals. Don't listen to your neighbors or your coworker or if you, for example, if you're sick, you have a heart issue, you don't want to go talk to your neighbor about how to fix your heart issue, right? You want to go to see a cardiologist. So same thing with buying a house, getting financing, go speak to a real estate professional. Right, somebody that's all they do. That's all they do for a living is to buy and sell houses. They know the in and out. They know the market. Now, the most important thing is that people think that by doing that, you have to pay so much for commission. Buyers, that's not true. You don't actually pay for the commission for the real estate agent. The seller actually pay for that. So it doesn't cost you anything at all. So if that is the case, why not ask somebody that's what they do for a living? That's all they do, in and out. They get certified to be a real estate professional. So my recommendation, speak to somebody like that. You know, pick a realtor that will be on your side from the beginning to the end. So preparation is very important. And you know, you just like throwing a party. You don't just say, I'm gonna have a party tomorrow. Well, yeah, you can do that, but your preparation for that party, for the success of that party, might not be as well as planning it out for, you know, 2-3 weeks in advance, right? You have to have the guest list, the caterers, the menu, everything. Same thing as mortgage financing, buying a house. You must prepare time for that. Don't say, I'm going to move out. My lease is up at the end of June. Oh, now's a good time to go look, you know, to see if I can qualify. It's not as easy as that. You know, you got to prepare yourself credit-wise, income, savings, things like that. You have to, I would say, at least do that about 3 months in advance, just in case something pop up on your credit report that you need time to clean it up, to pay it off, to get rid of it, to get your credit score up. The higher the credit score, the better financing option that you're going to get, okay? The minimum is 620 middle score, but believe me, if you have a 720 credit score, it will open up plenty of doors for financing, for getting grant funds and things like that.
Well, you know, Mike, this is a lot of information for a first-time, especially a first-time home buyer, because they are not familiar with the process. And so that's why we're starting with personal finance. And that's what we're talking about today, personal finance, because we want our listeners and those that are interested in purchasing a home to understand the steps. And that first step is working with your personal finances. And when we also talk about the real estate professionals, there are housing counselors that are available to also help assist first-time home buyers through this process. And many of these housing counselors, credit counselors, lenders from the real estate agent on are available, as you mentioned, to provide oftentimes services for free in the beginning just to educate a person on the process. So when we're talking about personal finance, there are pros and cons of home ownership. And some people might not necessarily know what those pros and cons are. So could you briefly share with us some of the pros and cons of home ownership? Because home ownership may not be for everyone. Some people may say, okay, I prefer renting over home ownership. So let's talk about that. Can you share a little bit about that?
Absolutely, yes. Let's talk about the pros first. I want to be a little bit more positive going into this. So the pros is that you actually, when you purchase a house, it's an investment, all right? You invest in real estate because think about it. I mean, besides 2008, 2009, historically, real estate has always been going up in value, is appreciate in value. So what that means is that let's say you purchased the house for $200,000. I would say 5 years from now, you can sell it and have a little bit of an equity when you sell it to be able to use that to buy another house. Okay, so that is a definitely positive thing. If you don't want, obviously, you know, you got to do that. But the only thing about that is you got to prepare yourself to be able to get to that level. All right. The other thing, the positive thing about buying a house is that you actually, this is your house. You can do anything you want in that house. Okay. You can have a party if you want to. You can invite people to come over. You can rent out your house. You can rent out your room. Whatever you want to do, there is no restriction because that is your house. Okay. Versus renting a house, the landlord might say you cannot have dogs or cats, or you cannot have more than 4 cars in the parking lot. And, you know, there are plenty of restrictions. So there are a lot of good things that you, as a owner, you pay yourself. You pay your own mortgage and you build on the equity instead of paying the landlord's mortgage and build his or her equity. So many things that you can look at. Let's talk about the cons. So there are people that don't want to deal with the regular main of the property. For example, let's say that the sink backup, you know, instead of calling a plumber to get the repairs done, you can actually call your landlord and the landlord will take care of that for you. Anything, you know, like the carpet that you know, create a tripping hazard, anything that repair needs to be done and you're renting, you can rely on your landlord to do that. But when you own a house, guess what? You are now your own landlord. So you actually have to do all of the repairs yourself. But I tell you, I mean, if you have the capability to buy, I would highly recommend to buy. It's just a different feeling owning your own property than renting it. It's just, you know, it's just a secure thing that you actually, this is your house. You can do anything you want. I mean, I hope that answered that part, the pros and cons for you.
Well, what about if you could answer this, Mike? Because there are a lot of people out there that may have heard this term but might not really know what exactly it means. And if you're in the home buying process or if you're even preparing for the home buying process, at some point you're going to hear the term equity. And, you know, a lot of times that's going to be a very important aspect. Not necessarily as a qualifier, but it's definitely a term that you would definitely need and want to know. Could you explain to our listeners what equity is and why it's important to know that?
And I know you just mentioned
Absolutely.
Something about
yeah.
We want the listeners to understand what is equity, because that is a positive pro.
Absolutely. Equity is basically the difference between the value of your property and compared to the loan amount. So, for example, let's say you bought the house for $200,000. And so this year, let's say 2020, okay, the value of the property is $200,000. And 5 years from now, more than likely that value is going to go up. And it's typically 3 to 5%. So 5 years from now, let's say it goes up to $225,000. Okay. So at that point, during that 5 years, more than likely you are paying towards the principal of the loan. So let's say $200,000 and you borrow $180,000. So right off the bat, the difference between the sales price and the loan amount is $20,000. Okay, that's the simple math right there. Mm-hmm. But 5 years from now, your house is worth $225,000. And during that 5 years, you pay down that loan from $180,000 to, let's say, $160,000. Okay, so now the new value is $225,000 and the loan amount is $160,000. The difference between the two is $65,000. That's what we call equity. Okay, equity meaning that the difference between the value of the property and the loan amount. So with that, let's say you decide, oh, I'm going to go ahead and sell it. I need to buy a bigger house, or because of my job, I need to transfer to a different state. When you sell it, that will be your equity. That is the amount that you are getting from the equity of your house, from the person that willing to pay that amount for your house, minus any commission or any fees that you pay to the buyers involved in closing costs, and that will be what you walk in away. Okay, so that now, because you mentioned that is a huge advantage of owning a house instead of renting, because once you move away from your rental property, guess what? What do you get back? You will be lucky if you get your security deposit back, and
that's it.
That's the only thing that you get back after five years that you live there and rent from your landlord. So yeah, you're not getting anything out of renting, basically.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this: can a person increase their equity by, for example, let's say, I mean, a lot of people have heard that if you make one extra mortgage payment per year on your mortgage, that you can actually reduce the amount of time that it's going to take to actually pay off the entire loan. So let's say, for example, somebody did that for, say, 5, 6, 7 years. They're reducing, you know, that extra payment going towards the principal. Would that help to increase the equity even during the short period of time that they own the home?
Yes, you can. Definitely. The more money you pay towards the principal of the loan, the less the balance will be. And in combination with doing that and the appreciation in value of the property, create a bigger equity. Okay. So when even 5 years, if let's say that you pay an extra payment towards the principal, it's going to reduce the principal amount dramatically. And also, mortgage interest is only charged on the outstanding principal. So, you know, not like, you know, a regular installment loan, there's interest that compound all the time. You know, it's already there on the mortgage. It's only on the principal, whatever the amount is that you owe, that's what the interest will be charged. And yes, if you pay more towards the principal, you cut down your term dramatically, which means you build the equity even faster that way.
You know, this information can be kind of complicated to a person that's maybe listening for the first time, and so that's why we encourage the listeners to continue to listen to the broadcast, because we're going to get more in depth concerning some of these terms we're using when we talk about the principal and when we talk about equity. But again, talking about personal finance and the opportunity to create wealth through this form of equity building is something that allows a person, especially after you start, you own your first home, then now you have a down payment or you're building money to be able to purchase something else. You can leave an inheritance. We can go on and on and on and talk about those pros or those advantages. But we just talking about the pros and the cons, and talking about personal finance, how far in advance should a person start preparing their finances in preparation for buying a home, Mike? I know you mentioned maybe about 3 months, and I know it's probably a case-by-case basis, but on average, what would you say is a good time to start?
I would say, typically, I would say 3 to 6 months. The reason is that it will take that long to straighten out your credit if you need to. So I highly recommend that you get a free annual credit report at least once a year, so that way you know what's on there to maintain a high credit score, to be able to correct any kind of misreporting or anything that you are unexpectedly will see on your credit report. For example, medical bills. For some reason, I mean, you know, everybody does have it. I mean, they don't actually send you the bill. They just send directly to collection. So, I mean, you know, you might pull your credit report and say, I never got the bill, and here it is. It showed up under collection. And if you don't have the opportunity to review your credit report, you wouldn't know that it's there. And once it's on there, it's going to decrease your credit score the longer it stays on there. Obviously, it's going to make it worse for you to go get financing and get the best term out there. So I would say 3 to 6 months. If you see anything strange on your credit report, you have the opportunity to correct it right away. You don't use credit, you use cash for everything. That will actually hinder your chance of getting financing, because if you don't have credit, you're not going to have credit scores. So if that's the case, and you find out up front, you have the opportunity to go and get, you know, a secure credit card or a regular credit card and start making payment on time. It typically takes about 3 months of payment to get that credit score, build up good credit score. So, you know, if you do that 3 to 6 months prior to getting ready to buy your house, by the time you are you're ready to put down a contract, you are ready with credit. You might save up money for down payment. All of that, you are much better. You're in much better position to purchase.
You know, Mike, even as I'm listening to this discussion, this interview, you know, there are a lot of people that could benefit from, you know, hearing this type of information. And there are some people actually have these types of discussions about credit, about personal finance, even around the dinner table. I mean, some people, this is a dinner conversation. They are sitting even with the children, educating the children on the importance of credit, personal finance, a savings plan, I mean, all of that. Could you talk about the importance even of educating your children, even with this information, so that as they grow up, they develop good financial habits? Because, you know, I'm sure you've seen people that have come to you from, you know, with A1 credit when they walk in the door, and some people that have had to work on it because of certain decisions that they have made, you know, financially that weren't the best. But they just weren't taught. They weren't educated on the process. Could you talk about the importance of educating yourself and educating your children about personal finance and its importance, so that when they do grow up and are ready, they can take advantage of what's out here?
Absolutely. I can't stress enough that you have got to have good credit, because think about it. People keep saying that cash is king. Not so much anymore. And as a matter of fact, I mean, I hear the other day there are some company, because of the COVID-19, they don't want to take your cash anymore. If you don't have credit, if you're not able to pay by your debit card or your credit card, you're not buying. So, I mean, it is very important. So, yes, my daughter, I have a 19-year-old daughter and a 16-year-old son. When they were 16 years old, obviously at 16, you're not able to get a credit card, but you can get a debit card. I opened an account for them, just a regular checking and savings account that came with a debit card. And with that debit card, they can charge it. And you know, I teach them, hey, when you charge it, it's a debit card. You must deduct it away from the checkbook register, so that way you know how much money you have left to be able to spend the next time. It is very important. And they were, I mean, you know, they were 14, 16 when I started doing this for them. So by the time they're 18, they can get a credit card, right? It's not a lot. It's a $300 limit. But I told them right off the bat, you might have $300, but I would not use more than $90, which is 30% of $300. And if you're doing that religiously, use it, pay it off, use it, pay it off. You're building your credit. And now my daughter, she is 19. She has two credit cards, one with Capital One and one with Discover Card. And that's how she's going to build credit. Think about it. If she's 19, building that kind of credit, paying on time, not a lot, you know, of credit, just a $300 or $500 limit, use that. By the time she's ready to buy, you know her credit score is going to be above 700 easily. And people, if with that mentality, not teaching, not just doing it for yourself, but teaching your children, can you imagine the next generation when they're ready to buy? They're going to be so ready because they have disciplined themselves. They have a checking and savings account. They have a debit card, a credit card. They know about financing. They know how to budget and have a spending plan. They're going to be tremendously better in home ownership going forward. But yes, it is very important to do that. And it is, again, it's not easy. Everybody's different. You know, right now with what's going on, we facing cutback in hours from your employer, a lot of layoff, a lot of, you know, just not easy. But if you have the opportunity, again, you got to make sure that you don't spend more than what you make. And that's probably the most important thing that you want to take into consideration. Have a little bit of a net egg, like at least 2 months of saving. So just in case something happens, you have that money to live on while you're looking for another job or another opportunity to generate income. But yes, very important with credit. It doesn't matter how young or old you are, you have got to be able to do that, because I truly believe one day cash will never be exchanged anymore. Everything will be just credit. I mean, with the Apple Pay and, you know, on the order online and stuff, it's just, you know, cash is not an important commodity anymore. So.
Well, you mentioned, Mike, you mentioned the 30%. I said you mentioned that you would teach your daughter, you know, don't go over 30%. Why is that important? Because you might have somebody out there that says, you know, to use your example of $300, they might say, well, I have $300. I mean, as long as I'm paying it off once a month, or even if I'm just putting something on it once a month. Let's say, for example, somebody says, okay, I've ran it up to the limit, but, you know, I pay $25 on it a month. You know, it's not going to collections. So why? What is it about the 30% benchmark that's so important?
Absolutely. The way the system calculates your credit score, they look at the availability of credit. So if you are at $300 and you have a high limit of $300 and your balance is at $275, the system recognizes that you are maxing out your credit. And every time they see that, your credit score start going down, meaning that you are strapped for cash or for available credit, that you have to max out your credit card. Okay? And every time you're in that position, your credit score will start to go down. So let's say you have two or three credit cards, they all max out. You're not going to see that credit score very high at all. So the rule of thumb is 30%. You want to keep it at 30% of the high credit limit, pay them on time. If you have to carry a balance, obviously the best thing to do is pay it off on a monthly basis, but not everybody have the ability to do that. You never know. You just have to carry a balance, then make sure you carry no more than 30%. That's how the system calculate your credit score. So,
everybody, our special guest today is Mike Kao of George Mason Mortgage. If you have a question or a comment and you're listening by phone, all you have to do is press 1. If you're listening online, we're going to give you all the information that you need. You'll be able to contact Mike, and you, if you have questions, other questions that you may feel more comfortable sharing with him personally, that's fine. You'll be able to get in contact with him, and we'll tell you all about how you can do that very shortly. Okay, again, our special guest is Mike Kao. We're so great. And we're just filled with gratitude to have an opportunity to speak with him. We're talking about personal finance today. We got a series going on. This is the first show in a series on the home ownership process. What do you have to do to prepare for a home? We're going to be talking about the personal finance, credit reporting, the role of the lender, the role of the real estate agent. I mean, we've got a lot of positive, powerful shows lined up for you, so we want to make sure that you make sure that you tune in, tell somebody about it, because this information is powerful. Yvette?
So what we want to do, we want to help you to get financially fit and ready, and that deals with also your budget, okay, a spending plan and a budget. And we also, Mike, I know you also talked about, and you've been talking about credit, the importance of credit. That is definitely a part of your personal plan and how you should be working towards getting financially fit. I know that there may be people who are saying, well, I don't have any credit. Or they may be saying, well, I did abuse my credit. I may have filed bankruptcy. Are these things that would definitely disqualify me for the future, being able to purchase a home if I'm working on my personal finances right now? Can you I know I asked a couple of questions, but first, what are the things that a person can do maybe if they don't have credit and they need to establish credit? And then the second question is, what if they abuse their credit or they may have had to file bankruptcy and now want to get back on the right track?
Of course, let's break it down and talk about a person that don't have any credit at all. And I've seen a lot of those. Again, the mentality of paying cash for everything, that now is not a thing to do anymore. You got to have credit. So if an individual come to me and say, let's pull my credit and see what I can do, and the credit report come back not sufficient because it's just not enough credit, we do have program that we consider is called alternative credit. So alternative credits are, for example, let's say that you have a cell phone and the plan is with Verizon, mm-hmm. and you have had it for the last 12 months and you pay them on time on a monthly basis, no problem at all. You can actually get Verizon to give you a credit letter stating that I have an account with Verizon for 24 months, 12 months, whatever the situation is. The monthly payment is such amount, and it's been paid on time. That is considered alternative credit. And you can do that with Dominion, Virginia Power. You can do that with City of Richmond, water bill, gas bill. Anything that you pay and they don't report to the credit bill, that will be an alternative credit that you can use for financing. Okay, but again, don't get it if you have late payment in the last 12 months. That is not going to help the case at all. You want to make sure that you get a good credit letter that show that you have 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, whatever the amount of time that you have been paying on time. All right, so that will be to help to help compensate for not having credit at all. Now, the other thing that you can do if you don't have any of that, let's just say that individual, just a young individual, just ready to buy and don't have any of that at all, you can actually become an authorized user on one of your parents' good accounts. So let's say mom and dad have excellent account with Capital One or Bank of America, whatever credit card that they have, they can actually add on the individual as an authorized user And within 2 or 3 months, the good credit score from mom and dad are now bled over to the sibling or the children or the person that they authorize as an authorized user on their account. And that will be another form of establishing credit if you don't have credit at all. Okay. You can also, again, apply for a secure credit card. Typically, all local banks offer secure credit card. And what that is a is fund that you put up, your own money, basically. You put it up, and then you use it against it and then pay it back. And that's why they call it secure. It's secure meaning secure by the money that you put up front. And when you use it, the creditor actually report that transaction to the credit bureaus so that way you can build your credit score. So that is another form of getting a credit score for yourself. There's so many different things that you can do. It really depends on the individual, the situation that we can do that. But again, see, all of that takes preparation. You cannot say I'm moving out at the end of June and be able to accomplish that if you don't have credit, right? You're going to have to establish a new credit, or you're going to have to get the creditors to issue credit letters so that you can apply for your mortgage. So that is one aspect of borrowers that don't have any credit at all. The other one is you might have negative credit, like you have filed for bankruptcy before. That really will not automatically disqualify you for a mortgage. It really depends. There are two types of bankruptcy. There are a Chapter 7, which is forgivable. You don't have to pay back at all. You file. The judge will obviously notify all of the creditors, and it's forgiving. It's wiped clean, and you have the opportunity to start fresh because now you have nobody going after you for anything. It is very important that you have to reestablish credit because of that. Once you have filed a Chapter 7, everything is forgiving. You are start from day one fresh, which means the mortgage company will not want to see any late payment or collections or judgment after a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. And if you keep it clean, reestablish your credit, you can actually get mortgage financing 2 years after your discharge date from a Chapter 7 bankruptcy. Okay. The other type is a Chapter 13 bankruptcy. The Chapter 13, you can actually enter mortgage financing while you are in the bankruptcy. What that does is that you actually making payment back to your creditors and on a smaller agreeable amount by the court. So it's manageable where you can make the payment back to the creditor. It might be a 5-year plan. It might be a 3-year plan, whatever it takes to pay them all back. But while you're in it and you have a history of paying your creditor back or the bankruptcy court for 12 months on time, with permission of the trustee, you can actually enter mortgage financing while you're still in the bankruptcy. Okay?
Wow.
So, again, it's a case-by-case basis that we look at. So I just want to make sure that people know. I mean, you know, bankruptcy is not something that you're proud of, so people might shy away from trying to create more debt. But, you know, we are in a society that, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You just need to fix it and move on, right? I mean, you know, everybody make mistakes, and that's not a reason to shut down and say that I'm not worthy enough to go get a mortgage. You got to explore it and see if that is still fit into your budget, into your goal to become home ownership. So, yeah.
You know, Mike, a lot of people, you know, who have experienced difficulty when it comes to, you know, handling money, they've made mistakes, they've, you know, may have filed bankruptcy or may have, you know, just have mountains of debt. And they want to, you know, buy a house, you know, because, you know, when you're out there and you're spending money, you got the credit cards and, you're going out and you can walk into a store and just swipe a card and walk out with bags full of stuff,
mm-hmm.
right? A lot of people, that takes a lot of discipline. you know, to be able to manage that. And while they're doing it, they're having the fun with it. You know, they think, oh, well, I worry about that painted back if, you know, when I get to, when I cross that bridge. But then one day, you're going to want something. You know, one day, you know, after you've matured a bit, you know, you might say, okay, now I want to buy a house, but I've got all this debt. Oh, my God, I wish I'd have known then what I know now, and now I've got to clean up all of this mess. And it can be so discouraging because they might have, you know, credit card debt. They may have all kinds of debt, you know. So how would you advise somebody who's looking at that situation and thinking, you know, it seems like I know I could do it, but it would just take so long to turn this ship around. You know, what advice could you give to somebody who's saying, I want to buy a home, but, you know, I just got so much debt. It's going to take forever.
Absolutely. The issue there is that you have to have a very good plan. And the budgeting is what you want to get in. So there are free budget. You can Google and say, you know, personal finance budgeting. And with that plan, that might help. So, for example, let's say that you know your income. You know that you make it. Let's just say you make $50,000 a year, and you have student loan, you have car payment, personal loan, a few credit cards. So the goal is, how can I reduce this debt to be able to qualify for a mortgage? So I would look at the monthly expenses versus the income and say, how can I save more? Which credit card can I pay off first to be able to free up my buying power, okay? A lot of times you might need professional help. You know, you have local nonprofit organization that offer budgeting for free. And once you enroll into them, they actually will negotiate with your creditors to see if they can settle for less and then just close out the account, things like that. That will help you achieve home ownership. But really, I mean, you just have to either put away money to do that, or look at maybe into your 401k. There are, you know, some company that offer that, and you can actually use that to for the down payment, or use that to pay off your debt, pay yourself back to get back on track with home ownership. There's so many different things out there. You just have to do a little bit of research. But I would say most importantly is to reach out to nonprofit organization, because you don't want to go to somebody that will charge you a monthly fee when you don't even have enough money to do that. You know, you might want to go to a housing counselor where they will do it. They offer that kind of help for free and to achieve your goal. Yep.
And that's absolutely correct, Mike, and some people don't realize and don't know that you can get free housing counseling or free credit counseling without having to actually go to a credit repair agency. Some things you can actually do yourself. You can call the credit bureaus, or you could, you know, but it's better, again, as we mentioned from the beginning, to find an expert, work with an expert. You can actually Google. You can contact us. We'll give out information at the end of the broadcast. If you have questions, if the listeners have questions concerning, well, who can I contact? Who are some of these free credit agencies or credit counseling or housing counseling agencies? But, again, we're going to talk a little bit more about the process of actually qualifying for a loan, but there are down payment costs, closing costs, and out-of-pocket expenses that you have to be aware of just to be able to get qualified for a loan or to purchase a home today. So when you also talk about debt and we talk about savings, can you talk about that debt-to-income ratio? What is it that lenders look at when you talk about that debt-to-income ratio and why it's important to establish a savings plan?
Okay. So there are so many different loan products with the debt-to-income ratio requirement that are differently. So for example, I deal with a lot of first-time homebuyer where I use VHDA, Virginia Housing Development Authority. They create fantastic products for first-time homebuyer. Their debt-to-income ratio are typically between the 36% and the 45%. When I say that, 36% of your gross income should allocate towards your housing payment. Okay, the 45% is your housing payment along with all of your other debt should equal up to 45% of your gross income. Okay, so that will be something that a goal that you need to look at and say, okay, can I afford it? Now, it's very simple math. Let's just take your gross income yearly, divide that by 12. That will be your income monthly. And then you add up your monthly expenses, not counting like insurance or light bills or cell phone bill. I'm talking about obligated like a car payment, student loan, installment loans, and credit cards. You add all of those. Now, alimony, child support, those are debt. So you got to add those up too. And then look at the ratio and see, am I 45%? Do I have any money left after paying all this debt? And if you are not, then that's when you need to look at reducing those debt to be able to fit in that ratio for mortgage financing. So that is a VHDA loan. There are other programs like FHA, Federal Housing Administration. The debt-to-income ratio can be a little bit higher. But with that, we have to make sure that it is desktop underwriting approved. We want to make sure that it is approved, validated by a system where we can sell it to our investor. And a lot of time that those debt to income can go up to 50%. Okay, it's a little bit more risky, but if we get an automatic underwriting, we are okay to be able to proceed on with purchasing a home for the client. So again, that is a little bit outside of the box, but it can be done. A lot of time, the debt-to-income ratio can be higher with a bigger savings, a higher credit score, things like that. Again, that's why I'm so important to I'm stretching the credit score requirement. A higher credit score can open a lot of doors for you for approval. Okay. You also say ask about the money for down payment and closing costs and stuff like that. VHDA create program where you can actually get grant funds. There are income limit for those. So if you are within the income limit that are allowable by VHDA or nonprofit organization, you can get grant funds up to $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, or a combination of all the available nonprofit organization, including VHDA, to use all of that for the down payment or closing costs. If your income is higher than the income limit that they set to receive grant fund, then you can actually borrow the money for the down payment, and that will help keeping your cash at closing to a very minimal. Now, there's a general misconception that you can actually buy a house with no money whatsoever into the transaction. That is not true at all. Okay, you must understand that anything that you buy, you're going to have to put in a little bit of your own money. So right off the bat, when you are approved for a loan and you're ready to put in a contract on a house, more than likely you have to have some funds for the earnest money deposit, either $300, $500 to $1,000. So that will you have to have that. Okay, you have to have that to be ready to put in when you find that property that you really, really want to buy. Right after that, you have home inspection, and that costs money, $350 to maybe $500, depends on the size of the house that you're purchasing. After the home inspection, you're looking at appraisal fee, and that can be up to $500. So right off the bat, let's just say you have to have $2,000 just to be able to get into a house. Now, all of that money will be credit to you. That's just part of your closing costs that you pay up front. You don't actually lose the money. You just have to have it ready to be able to enter the transaction. Okay, so the miss of buying with nothing at all down is very, very slim. Now, there are programs that you can do that, like veteran. VA loan will allow you to do that because that is 100% financing. And a lot of time, if you can get the seller to pay a lot for closing costs, you might get your deposit back and even the appraisal fee refund back to you at closing. But, you know, obviously not everybody can qualify for that kind of loan. So prepare yourself. The more money you have, you don't spend it, it's still your money. So it's, you know, just nice to have it in the transaction to be able to make your loan look better for approval.
And, you know, Mike, that, like you said, that's very important to understand. That is something that has to be planned, and that is a part of your savings, at least having that $2,000. That is a part, just like getting pre-approved or with the credit score that you need, and then also having the out-of-pocket expenses to cover the earnest money deposit, which is that is like a security deposit that you put and secure on an offer of the house that you want to purchase. And then, like you said, the home inspection and appraisal. So that is some upfront cost, but that is also a part of the preparation that you need to be aware of in order to even start the process. So if we're talking 3 to 6 months, it may be a time where it's tax season. Maybe you can take the money and you're getting a tax refund. Some people got money back from the stimulus. You know, these are things that you can put aside, money you can put aside and put as far as the savings, because not only is your real estate agent looking to see whether you have that earnest money whether you have the earnest money deposit and out-of-pocket funds, your lender's looking for it as well. So that's very good.
Mike, you mentioned grants briefly earlier. Just had a quick question about grants so that the listeners understand how a grant differs from a loan. Grant is money that they do not have to pay back at all. Is that correct? Correct me if I'm wrong. Also, there are different grants for different people. There might be grants for teachers or, I don't know, maybe grants for nurses or grants for people living in rural areas or something. Could you talk about that?
Absolutely. Yeah, grant fund is typically you don't have to pay back. There are some that is called it's called a silent second, meaning that there will be a recorded deed of trust against the property. But the stipulation is if you stay in the property for 5 years, making your mortgage payment on time, it's forgivable. You don't have to pay back at all. So there are so many different out there. You just need to know where at closing what kind of fund that you get. So, for example, I deal a lot with Housing Opportunity May Equal, Southside Housing Community, where they have a certain subdivision where you can buy in there and the grant can be up to $25,000 and they will have it as a recorded silent deed of trust with the promise that you stay for 5, 7, or 10 years. And when you sell it, you are free. You don't have to pay back a dime at all. Now, there are nonprofit company that will say, well, I'm going to give you a smaller amount, but the time that you have to stay in the property will be less. So instead of $25,000, you can get like $5,000 or $7,000, and the time you stay there will be 5 years instead of 10 years. Yeah, and yes, there are grants for nurses, teachers, firemen, police officer. It just there's so many of them, but they all come with stipulation. You know, like you have to have a certain income limit. You have to, based on the household, you just have to know which mortgage company that offer those, and the mortgage company work for with first-time home buyer to be able to put you in contact with those organizations to get those grant funds, because all of them have different guidelines. So it's very difficult for me to address that with just one specific guideline, you know, just to make sure that we're not mixing the grant fund qualification from one to another.
Yes, and so, I mean, that's good information. And a lot of people don't realize, yes, there is, this money is available, and these agencies want people to take advantage of these resources. You have to go through a little bit more Probably, and not every lender knows about these grants. And so that's why, as a real estate agent myself, I normally inform my clients, you know, you need to work with the right lender. You need to, it has to be a person that knows about these first-time home buyer programs and things like that, because some people are not aware of these programs or don't want to take the time to work with their clients to help them to get that type of assistance that they need. Now, Mike is headquartered in Richmond, Virginia, so there are a lot of grant programs all over. We have listeners listening from all over, but, yes, definitely Mike is very knowledgeable about the programs that's available in the Richmond, Virginia area. Mike, can you believe it? It's almost an hour has almost passed, but I do have a couple of more questions. I mean, we can go on and on. But, you know, a lot of people are dealing with issues concerning how to handle their student loan debt and even judgment, and whether that's going to disqualify them, or what can they do to prepare for home ownership if they have a student loan or a judgment?
Student loan is the big thing now that the cost of education has increased tremendously. The problem with that is that when you borrow money to go to school, you got to pay them back. And especially if it's a government-backed student loan, you're not going to be able to get away with it. You can't put it in bankruptcy. You got to pay back, you know. So the government now have allowed us or actually just passed on a law where they are worried about the big foreclosure, the new foreclosure would be on student loans. So by qualifying an individual with student loan, we have to count 1% of the outstanding balance. It doesn't matter if that loan is in forbearance, deferment, or the borrower is still in school. We have to count 1%. So the average student loan I see is about $75,000. So if you count 1% of $75,000, you're looking at $750 a month. That will eliminate you from buying the house you want to buy. Think about it. Everybody have a car payment, maybe one personal loan, and a couple credit cards. And now if you have to add on another $750 to your monthly expenses, you're not going to qualify for anything at all when you're trying to buy a house. So there are programs that will count income-based payment. Okay, so on that $75,000, same example, that the balance is $75,000, instead of counting 1%, we will count the income-based payment. So the student loan company say, based on your income, we will say instead of paying $750, your payment is $100. We will do that. The thing is, you have to have at least a 680 credit score. So back to the beginning of the show, when I say the minimum is 620, but you want to shoot for as high as possible. So 680, 700, 720, because with that kind of credit score, and it just happened that you have student loan, you can still qualify for a mortgage using income base. But if your credit score is below 680, guess what? We have to count 1%, and that will eliminate a lot of buyers because of the student loan debt. Okay, it's not the same as judgment. Judgment, you just have to pay them. I mean, that is already gone in front of the judge. You might be able to negotiate with the party that was awarded the judgment for a less amount. And if you do pay a judgment off, it has to make sure you have to make sure that it has been released by the court, so that way it won't still show on your credit report. It will show satisfied, zero balance, and that is the only way to get your credit score back up and get you to qualify for mortgage financing.
And so what you're saying is you absolutely have to pay the judgment off. You cannot negotiate with the person that, I guess, the debtor concerning that
no,
judgment.
You can't. You can negotiate. Absolutely, you can negotiate. So let's say the judge fine for the plaintiff and the amount is $2,500, and you have had it for 3-4 years. You can actually contact them. Typically, they are represented by a law firm, an attorney. And if they're willing to say, they're willing to say, instead of $2,500, we'll take $1,500 and call it even. We just have to make sure that you have a satisfactory of judgment for the amount to show that it's a zero balance. Because if you agree to pay that amount and it's still a balance on there, then you have one of these days you have to pay the whole thing off. So, yes, you can negotiate if the other party is willing to do that for you.
Okay. That sounds great.
You know, it's interesting. It sounds like when it comes to mortgage lending, that for the mortgage lender, it's all about risk. When they're looking at your credit and they're, you know, determining whether or not you're a worthy candidate for them to extend, you know, this great sum of money to hundreds of thousands of dollars in many cases, bottom line, it boils down to, are you a good credit risk? Is that correct?
That you are right on with that. Absolutely. And the example that I use is this. If you see a stranger walking down the street and they come up to you and say, can I borrow $100 from you? What do you do? You're probably going to say no, right? I mean, and that's the exact same thing that I deal with on a regular basis. I'm dealing with strangers that come to me and say, can I borrow $200,000 from you? So we have to have guidelines in place. You know, I'm not going to turn down right away. We have to have guidelines in place and say, yes, we can do it. You have to meet these guidelines. Right? You have to have the credit score. You have to be on the job for a certain amount of years. You have to have a little bit of a pattern of savings. If you don't, these are the alternatives. You can get a co-signer. You can open new credits to establish credit score. And you can start a saving plan to be able to save up for the next 6 months to a year to be able to have the down payment for your mortgage. We're not going to turn it down right away. We have to point out what can we do to get this individual into home ownership. But, yeah, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, somebody come borrow your money, you're going to say, you know, I'm probably not. But, I mean, you know, we can't do that. We have to find a solution to them, or at least point them into the right direction, have a plan, and then come back in 3 months, 6 months, a year if they are not ready immediately. So, yeah, but it is a high risk. It's definitely a high risk because, you know, it's a 30-year loan. Can you imagine, you know, disciplined enough to pay off a loan in 30 years? Typically, first-time home buyer, you're not going to stay in your house more than 7 years, 5 to 7 year max. But, again, we have to be able to make ourselves feel better to lend out an amount that is going to be for the next 30 years. So, it's a little bit more documentation, a little bit more verification, but it can be done. It can be done. The most important thing is if you set your goal into doing this, let's say 2020 is my year to buy a house and start early, saving money, have a game plan, you can do it. I mean, you can do it. Anything can be done if you set your mind to it.
And, Mike, even in today's market, I just want to put that out there, even in today's market, because some people, they're a little hesitant right now because of what's going on, but in today's market, are you still seeing that it's possible?
Oh, I tell you, I have been very, very busy since the COVID-19. I hate to say it, this epidemic that we are going through now will help a certain population and will hurt the other population. So the people that they are helping, the people that have secure job, have money to spend, they're willing to spend. They're willing to buy, especially the interest rate is so low. I mean, it's tremendously amount of mortgage going through right now because of that. So, I mean, the bad thing is, and I'm pretty sure you see that, is the inventory is not available. Do you see that, or just me with my you know, the realtor, the partners that I work with? A lot of time, first-time home buyer will not be able to find a house that in the range of $200,000. I mean, there's multiple offers on that, and it's gone very quickly. So
definitely,
that is the issue that we are dealing with right now. But yes, there is a huge demand for mortgage financing right now. People are still buying. Interest rate is low, and consumer confidence is high. You know, but again, there is a population that work for the restaurant business and in such industry. That's where you are getting hurt because they are not open right now, and that's a tough thing to do when you don't have an income to be able to buy. So,
and so that's why it's a perfect time. And thank you so much, Mike, because that's why this is a perfect time for those that may be a little hesitant or to plan. This is perfect. This is a perfect time to prepare and to plan. Work on those goals. Work on your finances, because the market is going to rebound. So we just want to keep you encouraged and, you know, just say stay encouraged. I think we may have a caller, but someone just...
Okay. If caller, if you have a question, all you have to do is just press 1, and then we can bring you on and you can ask your question and make your comment. Mike, I had a question because there are a lot of people out here, you know, speaking of personal finance, might feel like, okay, in order to qualify on my regular 9-to-5, I don't really quite meet the income requirement, so I'll just go out and get a part-time job. How long does a person have to work on a part-time job? And, I mean, is that a tricky situation? Because if they qualified based upon that part-time job and then, say, after a couple of years, they get tired of working the part-time job, you know, you get tired of doing 9-to-5 and then doing, you know, 6-to-10, they're like, I need a break. That's going to impact their ability to pay to continue that mortgage payment if that's what got them qualified.
Absolutely, and that's why we have, if you have a, if you want to use your part-time job for qualification, you have to have a history of working part-time for 2 years. So beside your 9-to-5 job, you have a part-time job that you just started 6 months ago, just enough to make sure that you qualify for the mortgage. That won't be able to, we won't be able to count that as an income. You have to have at least a 2-year history. It does not have to be with the same company. So let's say that you work at Home Depot for 1 year, and then you decide, yeah, that's not good enough. I want to go to their competitor, Lowe's, and to make extra money or higher pay with Lowe's, and now you are working with Lowe's, but combine the two company, you have a history of working part-time for 2 years. Yes, we can count that. But you just started, anything less than 2 years, we would not be able to count as an income.
Well, I want to thank you for that. And as Yvette mentioned, this has been a fast, fast hour. We packed a lot of information. Mike really, really gave us a lot of wealth of information in this hour. To all of the listeners, I encourage you to go back and tell your friends about the broadcast. Even if you personally aren't looking to buy a home, you may have just bought one, but you know somebody that is, and you know somebody that needs to know about the process and can really benefit from hearing about personal finance. Please share this information with them. Mike, please give your information, but prior to that, if there's anything that we have not covered in this hour that you feel is important that the listeners know, please, by all means, share that. And, of course, please let the listeners know how they can get in contact with you, because I know that after hearing this information, they can tell that you have a wealth of knowledge, and you might have somebody that wants to pick up the phone and give you a call.
I appreciate that very much. Again, my name is Michael Kale. I'm with George Mason Mortgage. My office number is 804-521-0949. That again, 804-521-0949. You can also reach me on my cell phone, which is 804-301-8415, 804-301-8415, or email, which is MCAO, M for my first initial, last name CAO, at GMMLLC.com. I know a lot of listeners might have specific questions that if they want to just email me or call me, I can certainly go over, because not everybody is the same, right? Everybody have different scenarios that they are facing that might prevent them from buying, or maybe they think that it will prevent them from buying. But just like we talked about earlier, you need to speak to a professional. Okay.
Yep.
If it's finance, I will be happy to help. If you have questions related to real estate, you got to call Yvette. She will take care of that for you. Okay.
Thank you.
But the most important thing is set a goal. If this is what you really want to do, you can do it. It's not hard. I mean, if we don't lend money, we don't make money.
Mm-hmm.
You must understand that. If we don't lend money, we don't make money. So mortgage company want to lend money. We just want to make sure that we lend to somebody with low risk. We're going to get the payment back so that way we can continue to lend out money to other individuals. So, yes, let me know on the regular on the individual basis if you have a question that you don't want to share with the whole group, a specific scenario, I'll be happy to help.
Mike, I can't say it enough. This has been an awesome, awesome interview. Thank you so much for being our very first guest. You kicked it off with a bang, man. You're a tough act to follow, my brother. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I tell you, it's an honor that you guys think of me and invite me on your show. And certainly we will do this again. I believe the next one is on June the 15th. Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, so we encourage the listeners to follow us on the Blog Talk station, and then we'll alert you through Blog Talk of the next upcoming show. We do have one coming up next week. It's every Monday for the next 5 more weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be covering everything again. We talked about personal finance today all the way to the closing. Thank you again, Mike. I look forward when we have those personal in-class home ownership education classes again, and we can be there live to meet our listeners. And but thank you again.
Great show.
Thank you so much. You guys have a wonderful evening, and we'll catch up soon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Everybody, Michael Kao, he is the awesome loan officer with George Mason Mortgage, and his contact information is also in the description page. So if you didn't get it, all you have to do is just check out the description page, and we'll have his numbers up there, his contact information, so that you can get in contact with him. This has been a very powerful show. I mean, what a way to kick off this series on home ownership. I mean, and that's the show, the very first one, and what a better show. You got to prepare. You got to know about personal finance if you're really serious about buying your home, whether it's your first home or your second or your third.
That's right. Planning is the key, and that's what we basically want to emphasize today. Plan, prepare, and get the education. This is free education. Take advantage of calling Mike. You can also feel free to give us a call or email us at hwrblogtalkradio@yahoo.com. If you have some additional questions or comments, and also if you want us to add you to our mailing list with some additional information.
Oh, listen, we've been talking about the real estate and talking about home ownership. I don't know if we talked about you. I don't know if everybody knows that you are a real estate agent with Long & Foster.
Yes, I am with Long & Foster. Yes, you can feel free to give me a call, and I will also be sharing on the role of the real estate agent that's coming up in one of our broadcasts. So I'll be able to have the opportunity to get really involved in sharing with you the home buying process on the real estate side. Now, that's exciting to me because that's why preparation is the key, getting your credit ready, because then I will be able to help, you know, those that are ready to move forward in the home buying process.
You know, what's interesting is that a lot of times, I don't know if people make the connection that all of you work together, the real estate agent, the lender, the home inspector.
It's a team.
I mean, yeah, you got to put together a team of people that work together that know what they're doing. You've had an opportunity to work with Mike before, haven't you?
Absolutely, because I facilitate these first-time home buyer education classes, in-person classes, various libraries in Northern Virginia, all the way through Richmond, Virginia. And so I really enjoy doing these classes to educate people on the process, because once you're educated, it just makes it much easier to understand the process. And so it's exciting to me. And so now we are taking the opportunity to bring it live to you on the air.
How was it working with Mike Kao? I mean, that had
to be fantastic, fantastic. And that's why he was on the broadcast today. So we look forward to when he's going to come back and share on the role of the lender.
You know, it's when you're talking about people, again, we talked about talking to the experts, you know, yourself is an expert. You're an expert, obviously. You know, Mike Kao's been in the business for 27 years. I mean, when you've been doing something that long successfully and you're still doing it, you're obviously doing something right. And, you know, when it comes to working with people and putting together a team, you know, reputation is important, you know, and we've handpicked the people that we're going to be bringing on to talk about the different aspects of the home buying process so that we can give you the best opportunity to hear from those who are not just good in their field, but great in their field, you know. So, again, we encourage you to tune in. I mean, this is something that you need to have these discussions around the dinner table because oftentimes, I mean, there are some cultures some communities, that this is a normal conversation. What we talked about tonight, for some people, that's a normal dinner time chat, okay? For others, you know, we have to go to workshops to get this information. But however you get this information, it's only valuable if you use it. I mean, you could listen to a show like this and feel like, oh, that was an interesting show. That was really interesting. But it can only help you if you pick up the phone and call Mike Kao. If you don't call Mike Kao and you are in need of this type of information and you are in need of further assistance, because, again, there's still only so much we can cover in an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. There's so much more that you can learn. But we want to encourage you to pick up the phone, even if you think I'm not ready. Matter of fact, I dare say, especially if you think I'm not ready. There are a lot of people out here who have thought that they were not ready to purchase a home, and it wasn't until they actually went in, sat down with a lender, and actually had a conversation before they realized that, you know what, I am ready. The money that I'm paying for rent, I could be owning my own home.
Absolutely. We run across that all the time. And so, yes, please feel free. Give us a call. I'm available, Mike's available, and to help you through this process. We do have another class. Credit reporting is coming up, the importance of good credit. That will be next Monday on June 8th. And Linda Melton, with a community outreach director with Fulton Bank, she will be sharing with you the importance of good credit, establishing credit. Mike covered a lot of that information today in this broadcast. And then Mike will be coming back again on Monday, June 15th, and he will be sharing on the role of the lender. So we are excited about this broadcast because we love sharing this information.
Mm-hmm.
We love seeing a person go from the beginning of the process to the end at closing, especially for me when I can hand my clients the keys.
Mm-hmm.
And if you follow these steps, I would say that it just helps to make the process easier.
You want to stack the odds in your favor. You definitely want to stack the odds in your favor of being successful. So the way to do that is to educate yourself. You've got to educate yourself on the process. So, again, we thank you so much for tuning in, everybody, and we look forward to doing the upcoming shows. Make sure you tell somebody else about it. We truly thank you. We don't take you for granted. You could be doing something else, but you've taken time to tune in with myself and my lovely wife.
And I just want to mention again, if you want to contact us with some additional questions or comments, please feel free to email us at hwrblogtalkradio@yahoo.com or text us at 804-647-5868. That's 804-647-5868.
My name's Juwanza. Who am I? I'm the one who in giving receives more. Who are you?
I'm going to keep on giving.
All right. Thank you so much, everybody, for your time. Thanks, Mike. We'll be in touch, everybody. Take care. See you next week. We love you.
Bye-bye.